Good evening. Tonight we're talking about a complex and emotional subject that is often difficult to argue unemotionally. But it's a difficult conversation that's taking place in ICUs and homes across India, where families and patients grapple with the painful decision of whether or not to prolong life-sustaining medical treatment. The Supreme Court's landmark decision to allow passive euthanasia and a living will has perhaps made this ghastly dilemma slightly easier for all of us. By holding up the right to die with dignity as a fundamental right. Now, according to the top court of the country, someone who is terminally ill can say no to treatment that can artificially prolong their life. It's an issue that has divided society and doctors for years. So is the top court's ruling welcome? Is it a progressive step? And is India's healthcare system, with all its discriminations, ready for it? But before we get to that, let me quickly just summarize and explain some medical terms not commonly used. What is passive euthanasia? Well, passive euthanasia is the withdrawal of medical treatment with the deliberate intention of hastening the death of a terminally ill patient. So it could mean turning off respiratory systems, stopping life-sustaining medication, even withholding food and water. So it's any medical or technological method of prolonging life that is stopped. And what is a living will? Well, it's a legal document that specifies whether a person should or should not be given life support treatment if he or she slips into an incurable coma state in the future. And we have in studio tonight, we have Dr. Vipul Mudgal. He's a director of Common Cause, the NGO that petitioned the Supreme Court to legalize passive euthanasia. We have Dr. R.K. Bunny. He's a critical care specialist. He's the CEO of the Nayati Medicity in Mathura. And since this debate is not just of moral significance, it's also got legal practicality that needs to be looked into, constitutional validity. There's also a fear of misuse. We have in studio Pranav Sachdeva and Alok Srivatsav, both of them who are Supreme Court advocates. We also have Father Stanley. He is the director of the Media Commission, the Archdiocese of Delhi. We have Rajiv Jain, spokesperson of the Jain Conference of Delhi. And last but not the least, we have Deepak Raheja, General Secretary of the Delhi Psychiatric Society. Mr. Mudgal, first and foremost to you, you know, it has been a long debate in and out of courts for the past 15 years. It's been a long legal battle for advocates of euthanasia. And now that the Supreme Court's verdict has come out in your favor, perhaps the real battle begins now, because the naysayers are all going to be waiting for their I told you so moment. Why is this a verdict, or is this a verdict that we should be celebrating?
No, absolutely. It's a landmark verdict. I think it should be celebrated. Very simple. You said it's complex and emotional. I think it was not complex at all when it was being filed. You see, Mr. H.T. Shori, the legendary Mr. Shori, who was the founding director of Common Cause, he filed this case and he was touching almost 90 when he filed this case. And the idea was very simple. When the plug is pulled, the family can decide, the doctors can decide, the lawyers can decide, everybody else can decide. Why can't I decide myself? You know, and that is the issue of self-determination and patient autonomy, which was important for us. And then the idea basically came with the advancement in medical sciences, right, that it's become easy to prolong life. And why should I be on, medical intrusion, which I don't want? So the idea of living will was, given by us. And we said, when I am in complete command of myself, I am in, my cognitive abilities are fine. You know, all of you, many of you must have given, the directives about your eye donation or, whatever, organ donation. Anybody can write at any stage.
So you think that will be a common act at one point now going into the future?
Absolutely. So I think anybody should be able to write and probably change later if you want to change your mind that, should I be in an irreversible...
It's interesting you say if you want to change your mind. So you're saying people will change your mind. Feel when you're healthy or young, when you, think you can overcome anything, is very different from what you feel when you're sick and vulnerable.
If you're sick and vulnerable, you want to change your mind, provided you are in control of your mind, which means, in other words, when you have property-related will, that also can be changed. Even if you've registered it with the court, you can change it. So for us, the idea of living will is not very different from any other will where I am giving an advance directive on my behalf to my family members or perhaps to my physician just to help, just to make sure that I'm not subjected to things which I don't want.
Okay. Dr. Mani, as a doctor, you're trained to preserve life, right? That's the basic, that's your basic job. So how is it possible that death can actually be a prescription?
I think I have an objection. I'm trained to preserve life also, to care. When you can't preserve life, when dying process has started, I'm trained to tend to the dying as well. So you can cure many of the times, but you must care all of the times. So that is our motto. Let's understand it. I must also object to the word passive euthanasia. I think it's an outdated term. Mm-hmm. Too heavily loaded. So it just
what
suppresses.
What would you prefer to use?
I'll tell you what the difference is. We have painted with one color the entire landscape, so you can't make out which is which. So one end of the spectrum is active euthanasia, which is you are actually injecting a lethal drug at the request of the patient as an act of mercy. So that is possible legally only in very few places in the world, maybe 6 or 7 places. But we are talking about an entirely different thing, which is not interfering with a dying process already begun, either withholding or withdrawing, or not pumping the chest, which is DNR. So this is not in any form of euthanasia. Unfortunately, the word has got settled. And in our terminology, medical terminology, it's outdated.
So euthanasia, your objection passive is to the word passive?
No, word, passive euthanasia carries a different connotation. I think it is not a deliberate act of anything, intending to kill or anything. Only thing is, at the request of the patient or the surrogate, if he doesn't want to be interfered with, we don't interfere with. There's an elderly.
But don't people generally want to live as long as they can?
Not necessarily.
And shouldn't we, should we assume that if we don't have a living will, I know you said not necessarily, but let me just finish. If we don't have a living will, should we assume that all patients want to live as long as they can?
You see, we think we do, but tending to dying patients, tending to terminally ill patients, this cannot be absolute. It's not possible. Lot of us choose to die gracefully, you know, in a dignified manner, without being intervened with. That is why the hospice movement has taken root in the West. Majority, I think, 84% of the octogenarians choose not to go into hospital at all. That is the hospice movement, where there's no doctor, there's no monitor. You only have a nurse and you tend to the comforts.
But India and the West, very different. The scenario is very different. Conditions
not
often
in dying.
Very different.
In dying, we are the same. The suffering associated with death, you see, I have worked for 30 years in an urban environment in Delhi. Now for the last 3 years, I'm working in Mathura, in rural and semi-rural.
And it's very different if you're living in urban India and rural India, especially
when it
comes to euthanasia in terms of...
Not in death and dying, not in suffering, not when you're interfered with during dying. Most of us, we may speak a different language, we may have a different ethos. However, the ethics of applying technology have to be brought into play. You can't apply anything injudiciously, particularly technology. So what Common Cause is talking about is a very, very fundamental, it's talking about two very fundamental things. Are we to use technology indiscriminately, injudiciously, or we factor in the possible harms and benefits? Number two, what is your fundamental right? Fundamental rights are given. You don't need a legislation to tell you that. Fundamental rights are you have autonomy, control over your body, you have privacy, nobody can penetrate, you're constitutionally guaranteed fundamental right, so therefore...
Right to live.
Right to live.
Right
but
to
not
live.
Right
no,
to Jan die
Kaur.
Right to
Jan
die.
Kaur case. I will come to that. Right to live includes
right
the dignified process of death, because until you are dead, you are alive. And there is a manner of treating you during that phase. And that is highly developed now, increasingly well developed in the form of intensive care concepts and palliative care concepts. So let us understand, let us accept that we have a right to dictate in what manner we are going to be treated at the end of our lives. This cannot be interfered with by any governmental or executive order. This is unconditional.
Okay.
Just a small thing, can I just add? One of the prayers of Common Cause was that please, we were asking the court, please constitute a committee of experts get social scientists, get philosophers, get, you know, lawyers and doctors, all of them, and deliberate it deeply. We are not saying that we have all the solutions, etc.
And that will have to happen because Parliament will is going to have to debate this because it's not
if the legislation is coming.
Directive from the court. Okay, but passive euthanasia has always existed in crude forms, perhaps in our country.
Can I offer a different term? Withdrawal and withholding of treatment.
Withdrawal and
that is the correct term without the emotional baggage, without all the confusion. You know, we are all like six blind men, you know, looking at an elephant differently. So if we have a standard definition, and incidentally, standard definition is out in this country, ICMR, Indian Council of Medical Research, has just published 12th March. Please look at it. I, along with Dr. M.R. Rajagopal, directed
this. I'm happy to go with withdrawal of treatment, doctor. No problem. Let's not argue over that. Fine. Withdrawal of treatment has always existed in India in crude forms, perhaps. You have families and patients who are grappling with telling doctors that, you know, they don't want treatment because it's very, very expensive. And then you have this heartbreaking, bizarre situation where patients are given these certificates called discharged against medical advice by hospitals, and then the patient is put into an ambulance where that is where they technically die, in an ambulance, either en route to their home or at home. And that is what happened in the case of young Adya. She spent a long time and a very expensive treatment. She was being treated. It cost a lot for the family for dengue at Fortis Hospital. So Jayanth is Adya's father. Jayanth, first, your reaction to the Supreme Court verdict.
So basically, I don't have any issue with the soul of the verdict. But the point is, the only skepticism I have is, in the current scenario of the Indian healthcare system, are we really living? We're just surviving. The word is survival. It's not living in this world. So we can't... Who will tell you, like the Supreme Court verdict says, that the person has to be brain dead or the person has to be in a vegetative state when this can be used? These are two conditions they mentioned. Who will tell you that a person is brain dead?
They're saying in the medical board.
In the case of Adya, the doctors on the day four, they were saying that her brain condition is serious, but they were not doing an MRI. I would like to relate, because we can talk about philosophy, we can talk about values and all those things at a very high level. Let's go into the use case, what happens in the real scenario in India.
Yeah.
We can't run away with that. The doctor kept on delaying the MRI scan. The condition was deteriorating day after day, and he was saying that I will not be able to do on a manual ventilator, and they delayed it for 10 days. Only when I stopped the payment and other thing, they went ahead, they saw that now everything is done, he's going to question me on everything, whatever treatment I'm trying to say right now, he's questioning that. So said, now we made all the money, now let's do a MRI and give him a certificate that she is brain dead. How will implement that in India? Knowing the India, what happens in India, who will going to decide that? And why again you are pushing the ounce on the patient and the relative? If it is so ethical,
so you're saying this can be
so ethical, if the doctor
hugely
can
misused. Alok, come in here. So
yes.
The Supreme Court has put in some guidelines in
yes.
place. Isn't that enough to prevent misuse?
Yes, I'll explain it. Very important part is this judgment of Supreme Court, which came on 9th of March 2018, has two broad parts. First part says that right to life, which is the fundamental right under Article 21 of Constitution of India, that includes within its ambit right to die with dignity. So far as this part is concerned, I don't think anyone in this country will have any objection.
Sure.
The objection which I am having and is regarding the second part of the judgment, which is pertaining to the living will, which is pertaining to the possible misuse, or I can say bad misuse, of the procedure of living will and subsequent consent. I'll explain you how, but before I explain it, how it can be misused, I must request all of us to think it in the context of the rural area, particularly non-metro areas, where we also know, I don't want to specifically comment, but we also know how bureaucracy, how things work, how it is very easy to get medical documents and every record prepared. Now,
why only rural areas?
I more
areas?
Because India is not only Delhi. So I'm saying if we think it on a larger scale, I'll explain two very pertinent cases which are generally happening of misuse. First case is, there is an elderly person who is having a lot of money, wealth, properties and all, and his relatives are there. In India, it is very easy to get a will made. Will is prepared. That living will is prepared.
So you're saying these wills can be forged?
Yes, this can be forged. And now I'll tell you,
So don't put anything past us Indians, especially whichever government comes, it's one scam after the other.
No, why I'm saying this on the basis of my experience in the court of law, on the basis, because every day we come across, if I can't give exact data, but if you have 1,000 cases filed, at least 25% of will. Probate of will, then so many cases.
What you're saying is, when there's an elderly person, the more you have to treat them, it's obviously coming out of their own savings.
Suppose,
and that means less savings for inheritance.
Yes,
is that what you're
saying?
I'll tell
you, although Supreme Court has said that when a person is making a living will, apart from two independent witnesses, also a judicial magistrate first class has to sign it.
Correct.
Right. Now, there is no parameter provided that what all considerations the judicial magistrate first class will take into account while signing it. Suppose a living will is made. One misuse can be there at the part of living will. Subsequently, it goes, the person is unwell, or if he is shown to be unwell and he is admitted in a hospital, then another misuse can take place at the end of the hospital, whereby opinion can be formed that
so
now
all
this
along
the,
it could be misused. Pranav,
now there
that.
Is
are
the
last point is
so this is one broad category in which living will is there, but Supreme Court judgment also deals with a situation where there is no living will at all, and still when a person goes into a critical illness condition and still his relatives think that this is a case where he should be allowed to die, then in that case Supreme Court says that you can go to High Court. Now my question is only this. In the absence of living will also. Now, we also know that many a times high courts also by mistake commit errors. And that is why we have Supreme
and
Court
and
cases.
We have so many pending cases in the high courts anyway.
So and this is not a normal case in which if by chance Supreme Court commits an error and subsequently you go to Supreme Court and get it reversed. Because by the time high court commits an error, and please understand, you are dealing with a situation where there is no living will. A person is unwell, he has a lot of properties, or a wife is there, she has an insurance in her name, she is an husband. May misuse. I'm not saying this is a general case.
So my
worry is only regarding the second part of the judgment, where it can be badly misused given the scenario which we are having in India. And that is why I believe that when now Supreme Court has left it to the legislature. So I really believe that when legislature will actually make a law, they'll take care of the misuse part.
Okay, you think so? But in a country like India, there's many avenues of misuse. Pranav, a lawyer, so why don't you come in here? Has the Supreme Court not thought of all of this? Have they not put in any safeguards in place?
Yeah, I think there are enough safeguards that the Supreme Court has laid down. This argument of misuse, which was also raised by the government in the Supreme Court, is highly exaggerated. Earlier in 2011, the government said passive euthanasia will be misused. And the Supreme Court overruled that. This time they said passive euthanasia, we are okay with that. While living will, we are against, as he's saying, because that can be misused. What we are saying is living will is actually a subset of passive euthanasia. If you allow passive euthanasia, you have to allow a living will, because in passive euthanasia, it's the relatives who are deciding. Here, the person himself is giving an advance directive when he is or she is in a state of mind that should he or she come in a situation where that person is suffering or is in a state of indignity. So what, as the doctor rightly said, was that individual liberty, which is at the core of the Constitution, has three facets. One is autonomy, the other is privacy, the third is dignity.
Correct.
And right to dignity and live with dignity continues till you die.
But so respond if on in the issue of misuse, how can you say with so much confidence, with so much certainty, that it cannot be misused?
Because
all laws in India are misused.
Exactly.
You know, why is this law? Why would this be so different?
So that's the correct argument. If all laws are misused, then you can raise the argument of misuse in every case. But here there are exceedingly high safeguards. There is a medical board. So first you convince the medical board. That medical board says no, that's the end of the matter, or you go to the high court. And if the medical board says yes, then there is another expert body. So if all the people have to agree and say, yes, you kill this person, it's very, very difficult to get that opinion. And it's not even killing, it's just withdrawal of life support. Supposing I say that I don't want to go to the house, I have a cancer, but I don't want chemotherapy. It's my right. But supposing I'm not in a position to say so. Now my relatives are saying that this person is incurable, is suffering, is in a total state of indignity. And the medical board says there is no, this person is brain dead, this person has no chance of recovery, and then you say, well, the living will is forged, the living will can be misused. That living will is a separate safeguard. But even if there is no living will, it's very difficult to get the medical board to agree.
Okay, but
Sarah, I have one more facet of misuse I must tell you, which is being missed totally. There's misuse on the other side, which is rampant. People are on ventilators for a prolonged period of time and they don't
By your fraternity.
Wait a minute. It is my fraternity, I agree. But let me open it up. How it has turned up, how it has happened. Because of this question of misuse on the other side, we have got this law delayed by 2 decades. And after 2011, you know, the medical fraternity, I represent the Indian Society of Critical Care Medicine. I was the chairman of the Ethics Committee, which wrote in 2005 the first guideline, ethical guidelines, on application of life support. Please, you can download it on the net. We had recommended all this then, autonomy, privacy, and that we should not prolong the process. We should respect the patient's wishes and all that. But the legal support enabling laws have come only now. That is why, you know, what he went through, Jayant went through, is partly, I agree, because of lack of sensitivities, but partly it is because of the lack of support, legal support. Now, in my own practice, let me declare to everybody, in my own practice for the last 15 years, I've been doing withdrawal withholding by a process which is published everywhere, internationally published. So it is ethically 100% endorsed. That 2005 document was vetted by 5 intensivists and ethicists.
It wasn't legal in the past few years.
It was ethical. First comes the ethics. What I'm saying is, on the one hand, you say your fraternity kept somebody on a ventilator too long. On the other hand, you say we can't have this law to take it off because there would be misuse. This is the paradox. Now, how can you practice ethically when you know the patient does not want the ventilator, or it is not going to benefit that person? You are only prolonging death and dying, destroying a family in the process economically. You know
it. Okay. So let's get Jayant in here, because understand? Jayant had to face a very difficult decision of taking the call to take your daughter off the ventilator. When you wanted to do that, did you face a pushback from the hospital?
No. So basically, it was the hospital that suggested me. So
to take her off?
Yeah. So said, let the baby rest in peace.
So Jayant, you know, this is over a... over some conversations, isn't it?
So that was the only conversation with the doctor. He called me in the room, my family and me, and he had that conversation.
What the guidelines recommend is repeated conversations.
But this is happening every day in
every day in
every hospital.
You should have repeated conversations.
I just want to underline one small thing.
Just a simple question.
Irreversible state.
No, he's asking.
You are in an irreversible state and you are in terminal illness. Only then this will be invoked.
I agree. Go ahead, John.
So my point is, what about the doctor's target? I have to keep a patient for so many days in ICU to get the most of it. What will do? Will they really do it? What are the questions? So don't defend your fraternity. The question, when you talk about ethics, the most unethical practices happen in the healthcare system in India.
Mercenary.
There was
alarmingly increasing.
How do we?
That's
so
true.
That
is and I think you agree.
That is why this law
and when we talk about
is
this
going
law
to support the ethical part.
I think very pertinent point you are raising. How would a person know, a layman who is not aware of the medical things, how would he know that his patient who is lying in an ICU is in a critical condition or not?
Yeah.
That is the bounding duty of a doctor.
That has to be told by a doctor.
No, you have to trust the doctor.
The doctor is
that's
not
why
telling
I want to
you.
Say, if doctor is not telling, that's what I want to say. That if you want to support ethical practices, you want to support that element of healthcare, which is not target focused.
So only problem I have when a doctor talks
then
about
ethics.
You need
an enabling law.
There's no ethics. There's only money making machine. They want to make profit
largely,
for their hospitals.
This is a set.
It's no ethics in the doctors left at all in India.
I put up my hand.
Now the hospitals are converting
into
business
profit
making.
I know of professionals, including myself.
We all
who have
wait
a minute.
Very few.
There's some common scenario like that. Say
you must
also say.
Okay, there'll always be exceptions. Let's agree on
we
that.
Must have
but
long
the point Jayant is making, he's speaking for the public who is increasingly feeling that they are not being listened to and they're only being milked as cash cows. But there will always be exceptions. Jayant will also agree to that.
No, that is why we have taken the initiative to create ethical guidelines, and we have been fighting for this law. I have been an impleader in this petition. So if my conflict of interest is in putting people on ventilator, why would me and my colleagues do that? So I want to tell because this is not being told properly. Before the Common Cause petition came the article on ethical and legal what do you call, framework for end-of-life care. And all over the world, there is a movement to which I'm a part of. Wellpicus is a movement. Worldwide end-of-life practices improvement in ICUs. I'm a part of it. What I'm trying to say is, you, on the one hand, you have unethical practices. On the other hand, you have a movement to improve the ethical practices. Which one would you support? Which one would you enable? So these
so
laws
So India's going on board, but
enabling.
How does it work out on the
Sir,
ground?
I just
that is the implementation,
that.
Of course, of all laws are very different in India than they are abroad, which is what we're here to debate, and we're debating all the other angles.
Just point one I want to make. My daughter was put on ventilator without my consent. The signature on the consent form for ventilator was forged, and that has been found out by the committee which entered the inquiry. You tell me where I take a decision.
I am not.
Where I take a decision?
I am not.
So that is my point. Is how will you implement
top
such a thing?
Jayant, I am not going to defend.
I think we've agreed that look, there will be exceptions.
We
let's not get into that. Deepak Raheja,
I'm only asking
but when
for support,
we talk about
right
misuse,
practices.
As we mentioned earlier, what your views are when you're young and healthy, invincible, are very different from when you're sick and vulnerable. Also, isn't there often a time when someone who's sick, if they take a decision, could that also just, you know, be disguised or a camouflage for depression?
See, so primarily, the whole debate about whether it's right or wrong. So there are going to be rights and there are going to be a lot of arguments in disfavor of it. Like he says, he was very unhappy that his child was kept on ventilator. But at the same time, he recalls that perhaps to unplug the ventilator, his consent was not taken. So if the
other
way point around. That I'm making is that so this whole I'm sorry if I'm using strong words, the charade of an advanced directive or a living will, is it meant for the haves and the urban and the richer class? Because the middle class and the poor man is grappling with day-to-day life. He does not have the luxury of being able to fathom how he is going to die, number one.
Right.
Number two, at a time when he is terminally ill, is this somebody who is on a life support system? And as the doctor said, the question is of unplugging and letting the death take its natural course. Or is it somebody who's perhaps grappling now with a depressed state of mind, as an unable to decide, unable to bear the pain? So we are talking about the issue of palliative care. We are talking about the issue of intensive care. We are talking about the intensivity with which we need to improvise. If the right to dignity is what we are talking about, then does it not include improvising the palliative care so that palliative care is strong enough, good enough, that the pain bearing thresholds of individual in that state is much higher? We talk about morphine pumps, self-administering morphine pumps, you know. So so now if we talk about population which is on a ventilator, or even the Schonberg landmark case that we are talking about, it took 42 years and there were multiple debates. The court had another view. The court said, if you want to unplug, you have the legal consent of the court to go ahead and do it.
She was not on a ventilator.
She was not on a ventilator.
She was
not on a
ventilator.
Agreed. She was not. But if you look at the picture, if you look at the cachexic state, if you look at the sentiment of the nurses who were looking after her, it again comes to a dilemma in terms of whether those resources could be used for someone else. And if that is going to be the disequilibrium, then we are probably moving towards a society which is talking about being unempathetic. So it has always happened, this unplugging, whether in disguise, whether with consent, partly without consent. I mean, somebody who's vegetative, somebody who's not going to be able to make it, somebody who's brain dead, beyond a point to prolong life would probably be jeopardizing Article 21, which talks about the right to live, and the right to live also includes right to die with dignity.
Very interesting debatable questions. One, of course, the fact that, I mean, should Aruna Schonberg be allowed to have her medication or food withdrawn because she will provide another bed for someone else? I mean, that should not be the reason why she's finally taken off her food and tubing. But you raised the whole rich and poor concept, and that is really crucial in a country like India. Dr. Mani claims that there's no difference when it comes to death, whether you're rich.
I don't certainly agree with that. Because for the rich, for the middle class, it may be the issue about how much money is going to be spent. Right. For the poor class, unfortunately, please allow me to say it, the cost of life may have a different context.
Correct.
And they're grappling with other issues.
Poor people are grappling with these issues.
No, I'm obliged to answer this question.
Yes, you are.
Because I'm telling you that those who are deprived of modern medicine, you know, there's a huge class, who don't go on ventilators anyway.
Yes.
But there is a large body of lower middle class, very small, tiny portion of the people who have surplus. Now, majority of our families do have negative surplus when they get into an ICU.
Yes.
So any prolongation of ICU care which is beyond that is necessary or legitimate is going to destroy families. So don't talk about rich and poor here.
No, we have to talk about rich and poor.
No, I'm telling you, we are destroying people if
the,
we don't have enabling law.
The point here is, if this law goes ahead, Parliament clears it, is this not just an advantage for the rich? They can afford it. The poor person, it's not even a debate.
Can I tell you one thing?
They're disadvantaged.
If you pitch it on economics only, then there is a problem. You must pitch it on humanity. There is a suffering element. There is an autonomy privacy element. This is what we're talking about.
Jay, you're talking about humanity.
One lady, very sad, doctor. Devi in Patna.
Humanity. This
she
is
was she was in deep coma. Her husband was a daily wage earner. He had a very small house which was sold. And then the child, she had only one child who was in class 5. He was he became a school dropout. Because his father could not take care of his school fee. Another case, you know, five children of one gentleman.
What we're saying here is, in a country with such inequality, the option of withdrawal of medication or passive euthanasia will be pushed onto a poorer person.
Poorer person,
and it won't
even
be pushed
more.
Onto a rich person. So they are not equal in any way.
If without having looked at how a decision is taken, how this decision ideally is taken, all this is written down. We have got the guidelines.
How is this decision taken?
I'll tell you. Firstly,
I would say, as a family member, of course, you have to look into the economics.
Can you give a little bit of time for a doctor to explain?
Please do, sir.
Because
go ahead.
I'll tell you, like any medical decision, which is complex, which has to integrate many things, this is a challenging decision, sensitive decision, which involves lot of conversation with the family, and there are certain criteria to be fulfilled. There's got to be a reasonable diagnostic certainty and a prognostic certainty, and then there are certain triggers. There are certain triggers for a conversation like this. 10 of these are listed. One of them is a case like yours. You know, more than 2 weeks after a septic, you know, multi-organ failure is a trigger for these conversations. Only when those are fulfilled. And then there has to be a body of people taking this decision, not just one single person.
But I want to talk about the rural and urban, that divide. You're digressing now. Let's go across to a gentleman here. Aapke pitaji bimar hai.
Yes,
kya problem hai?
Ma'am, cancer. Unke pair mein cancer hai. Aur doctors ne abhi chemotherapy, chemo sessions chalte hain. To aur ab unko bola gaya hai ki aapke jo hai next chemo tab hogi jab aapki jo purani research se हमें पता चलेगा कि आपकी हम ऑपरेट कर पाएंगे या नहीं, आपकी बॉडी
आप
इतनी कैपेबल है।
सर, आपके पिताजी क्या करते हैं?
मैम, मेरे पिताजी एम्स में ही सुलभ इंटरनेशनल में उनकी जॉब है एज अ, क्योंकि उनका एनजीओ
इज फ्री।
मैम, फ्री नहीं कह सकते, उनके पैसे लगते हैं, कई जगह उनके पैसे भी लगते हैं।
नहीं,
तो, हाँ, हाँ, तो मैम इस वजह से हो जाता है।
और आपके पिताजी अब क्या कह रहे हैं?
मैम, कंटिन्यू ट्रीटमेंट कर रहे हैं। और मैम, अब उनको धीरे धीरे फर्क भी हो रहा है। पहले चलने में भी उनको थोड़ी दिक्कत होती थी, अब वो थोड़ा बहुत चलते भी हैं और अब उनको मैम फिर भी आराम है।
तो आपने कभी did you ever think about the issue of not giving him treatment?
मैम, कि
आप क्या करते हो?
मैम,
आपके पास जॉब है?
नहीं मैम, जॉब नहीं है, मैं जॉब के तलाश में हूँ। और
आपके पिताजी को सैलरी मिल रही है?
सैलरी नहीं मैम, सैलरी नहीं मिल रही। उन्होंने कहा भी था, तो उन्होंने कहा कि सैलरी का कोई ऐसा हमारे पास नोटिफिकेशन नहीं है कि हम उसको सैलरी दे।
तो आपकी ट्रीटमेंट कैसे चल रही है, आप कैसे पे कर रहे हो?
मैम, पे तो जैसे अब मैंने आपको बताया कि सुलभ इंटरनेशनल एनजीओ ही है और कुछ मेडिकल प्रोवाइडिंग कुछ तो है। और मैम, जैसे और जो स्कैन है, जैसे पेट स्कैन है ये, और एक MRI स्कैन है उनके में जो
तो आप सर जब सर कह रहे हैं कि गरीब लोग और अमीर लोग में कोई फर्क नहीं होता है
हाँ.
जब उनको डिसाइड करना है कि अपने लव्ड वंस
हाँ.
जिन उनके माता पिता जिसको भी ट्रीटमेंट दे रहे हैं दे हैव नो प्रॉब्लम इन डिसाइडिंग कि कंटिन्यू करे कि नहीं कंटिन्यू करे आप क्या कहोगे इनको
मैम कंटिन्यू तो करना चाहिए क्योंकि मैम अगर वो कह रहे हैं कि अगर हम अगर गरीब को और अमीर को अर्बन और रूरल को दोनों को वो साथ लेके चल रहे हैं और जैसे मैम टाटा मेमोरियल कोशिश कर रहा है कि अब कैंसर के जो है उनको पेशेंट्स को जो पुअर पेशेंट्स हैं उनको इतने कम अमाउंट पे हम वो दे पाए तो मैम ये गुड
पॉसिबल एंड शुड बी डन दैट्स व्हाट आई एम डूइंग आल्सो इन
अथॉरिटी इज नॉट बी
डूइंग इट वन केस यू हैव अ जेंटलमैन हु इज गोइंग टू एम्स वेयर द ट्रीटमेंट इज पेड फॉर Jayant took a decision to go to a private hospital because he thought he would get better treatment for his child. And then you also knew that your funds were, you were running out of funds.
No, funds were never a problem.
Okay.
So funds were never a problem. I never said on the last day I applied for personal loan and everything so that I can manage the funds also after that. But the only thing is like the misguidance from the doctor. That is the big issue. Like whenever we talk about this, who is going to take the decision? Why are we putting the onus on the family? The doctors can take a call and they can take a buy-in from the family. Okay, I have based on these facts, there is no chance of survival.
Yes.
Now you decide what has to be done.
That is the standard of care.
Essentially, what he is saying is that it is progressive. That had the MRI been done on day 3 and he would have been told that there is no chance at all for survival, maybe he would have taken the decision earlier. So it's not that when he says the fund was not a problem, the intent was not a problem. He had to apply for a loan. So for a whole lot of patients, I think the debate is about economics. It's about the money that's going to be spent on treatment and also the amount that's going to be left for the survivors to inherit for the rich and the very rich. So I'm saying the decision is progressive. We are not debating that. Correct. I think the decision, but we have to make sure these safeguards are in place. Now, the Supreme Court has laid down some guidelines. The government is coming up with a legislation, and I think in the legislation, it needs to be deliberated that these safeguards are in place so that the misutilization, which is quite possible that in a lot of cases, for the want to be able to check these few, the passive euthanasia may become active euthanasia, and then the whole debate will talk about assisted suicide. The clinics in Switzerland, where you could fly to and request for assisted suicide. So we don't want to essentially, it's against our culture, our religion, our upbringing, and how we look at life.
Well, talking about religion, let's get in Mr. Jain and let's get in Father Stanley. And Father Stanley, first, what's your stand on the court's verdict?
See, even though they consider it as a landmark judgment, I would not call it. The reason is very simple. I have never desired to be born on earth. Okay? When I don't have a desire, I cannot determine my birth, how can I determine my death?
But you are assisted in birth. If
I am assisted, but then it's not my personal
coming
in.
She could have been assisted in birth.
I am an assisted in birth just to come out and be there, right? But my life was given as a gift to me. And what right do I have the life to be taken? Even if the government says, okay, it's okay, you passively can be done, or as I said, withdrawal of this thing can be done, all those things. But then in your thing, technically, from a moral point of view, I as a person have no right to take my life. I think remember the movie Gujarish. Okay, Gujarish. Yes. He was wanting to have a death. Okay, he wanted to have a death. Finally, what he turns out to be? I am someone who is very excited about death. I tell people.
But those are films, sir.
No. Listen, I tell you.
Sir,
I tell you. I am very excited about death. I'm very happy to die. Okay. And when I share this concept of death and it's an excitement, people say, Father, you're young. When you grow old, your desire to live will increase. Now, a person dying on a bed, 82 or 93, even with a life support, he would prefer to be stay on. That's human
desire. But we
don't
know. That's where.
That's
presuming.
Actually, it's again.
I want to go back to the gist of your argument.
Life
Father Stanley,
also,
the gist of your argument is that it's not God's will, right?
It
God
is
decided
God's
to put
will.
You
it's
on
not,
this earth.
We are
and
forcing.
So only God can take you away. But when you put someone on a ventilator,
right.
When you have this unnatural medication that's been given just to keep them alive, how is that God's will? Perhaps take them off the ventilator,
listen,
send them home,
why,
and
why,
then let God's
no,
will work.
This medical advancement, technological advancement helped people to get out of sicknesses. And support their life supporting systems. Now, the God Himself has given human beings this ability to sustain through this technology.
But medical advances have also allowed, you know, the morning after pill, they've also allowed abortion. So it can't be one way or the other.
No, no, abortion, we are not talking about abortion. Again, that's another question.
But it's a medical advancement. Medical women advancement. Women have the ability to take control over their bodies because medicine has
Sarah, it's again a concept of choosing life and death. If you are a person of pro-life, you will never assist and agree with the concept that is being propagated today. And I'm a person of pro-life, from the natural birth to natural death. Okay, healthcare has been given so that life can be sustained.
It's an unnatural life at the end of it, and it's not a natural.
No, no, natural advancement doesn't help everybody.
Natural is when you remove doesn't the help life everyone.
No, you said the poor doesn't get... The rich and poor equally get affected. Sir, that's
something,
what Dr.
Something very simple. Sir, something very simple. In my grandfather's time, it was very common for people to have 8 children, 9 children, 10 children, even 14 children. And the life expectancy was something like 46 years. Yes. You know, today, it's very common for people to have 2 children, and it's extremely uncommon for people to have 14 children. And the life expectancy is about 80, 85, you know, in the middle class and rich classes.
Okay.
And
otherwise,
also, it's in the range of 68, 67. You know, so the world is changing. And we are also, you know, life and death is being decided by a whole lot of other things.
Okay.
You know, so we
Mr. Jain, come in here.
Yeah.
Sometimes death can also be good medical treatment.
You see, I will decide this judgment into two parts. One is the legal one, which reaffirms individual's right to die peacefully. And this is a very landmark judgment to this aspect. Because a lot of confusion was there, which was created by a lot of judgments. You see, if we go to Indian culture and Indian history, the court has also referred to passive euthanasia as good death. What is understood as good death in India? That is Samadhi Maran. What is Samadhi Maran? That when the process of death commences, till the actual point of death, how should a person should die peacefully? If a person dies peacefully, that is Samadhi Maran. If a person does not die peacefully, that is Bal Maran. That is not said this is a bad kind of a death. So Samadhi Maran has existed in India since time immortal. So now, I don't know why our courts need so much references from outside world or European countries, why they are so fascinated with them. Because in Indian ancient strictures, whether you go to Jainism, whether you go to Hinduism, whether you go to Buddhism, you see, in Jainism, there are two very important words. One is Sanlekhna and one is Santhara. And these are commonly misunderstood terms. Sanlekhna means self-introspection. It can be conducted by everybody. Whether he's in a dying state or he's not in a dying state, every healthy person can do Sanlekhna. Another is Santhara. Santhara is equal to Samadhi Maran. Samadhi Maran commences when your process of death has commenced. That is the time period when your process of death has commenced till the point of death. Now the Supreme Court has reaffirmed that the right of a living person till the point of death, he has the right to live with dignity in that particular period. So this is a very significant judgment, very landmark judgment, which has cleared the smoke from the country.
Okay.
I want to add one thing to this.
Let's quickly go in for a break because we want to get some audience reaction. So let's come back quickly and listen to them, and then we can get your closing arguments. All right. See you after the break. All right, you're watching We the People. Let's quickly get the voice of the people in. Go ahead.
Good evening. My question is for people who are depressed, and depression is basically characterized by hopelessness, helplessness, and death wishes. What if somebody who is depressed signs their living will at that point of time? And there's no correction measure, there's no check for them. So how would you distinguish between somebody who's depressed?
So, is there any
that's a very clear sign.
Only
if
you
already a safeguard.
So can you make a living will?
Only a person of sound mind can sign.
You can't do it in an unsound mind.
Yeah,
you can't do it when you know your cognitive abilities are not in your complete control.
No, but who is going to decide?
Once I've been diagnosed with an illness, then I can make my own.
No. You are required to be in a healthy state of mind when you are making your living will. Now my question is practical. I am talking about the rural area. Who will decide that a person who is making a living will is in a good healthy state of mind or not?
Okay,
that is a practical difficulty.
Would it be voluntary then? Mental and psychological pressure can also be on the patient to be inclined to opt this option. Also, this has been happening in India. Like, people belonging to the lower income groups, they also just withdraw their treatment and go to other, you know, resorts to other methods, such as the superstitions or other medical treatments.
These are actual realities where some soft pressures, especially to middle class, unsaid pressures can force a person to make a will because the family chooses that at that point they may not be wanting to spend that kind of money, you know.
No, so my question is this legitimizing the claim of there will be pressure on a patient because he knows that the family is burdened and he may be under pressure by his family even to just say, okay, I want to opt for this.
That's true.
The same argument actually says it may happen. It may happen.
When you are someone who is suing, it's again,
I must answer this. I will answer this.
Go ahead.
Whether you belong to rural area or you belong to urban area, whether you're educated or uneducated, must we not take consent before any intervention?
Now, how consent, does that consent come about?
Because
is the question.
This is
will there be pressure on the patient?
Let me
there
tell
will
you,
be. There will
consent.
Be.
Wait, not for withdrawal withholding. What I'm telling you is, any interventional treatment, any treatment at all, mandates that you take a consent. Why is that? That
doctor,
is
you are talking a very simple principle of life.
I want to be uninterrupted when I make a few statements which are very, very important in your daily practices. There is mandatory that you sign, you are asked whether you are consenting or not before any procedure. Forget about this death and dying. For any procedure, whether you are poor, rich, rural, urban.
No, but in his
all
case,
right, sir,
no, wait
a
minute.
Sir, there is one question.
So therefore, if you are under pressure, you may not sign.
And you may also sign because you're under pressure. Many people will because it's
believe,
your family that's at stake.
Yeah, can
you know you can't be cured.
Can you imagine
you know
the psychological condition of immediate family?
For this, and you say, okay, I may as well just sign.
Yes.
Sir, there is one question which I believe that this action which taken by court, it's not good. Because court has to also concern about the medical situation of our nation. People, they might be not able to visit in hospital. We are talking about the passive euthanasia. Those are admitted in the hospital. Right. Who will think about them? Those are dying on road every day. In the nation, people,
and that is where your observation is true. What you just now observed, this act or this provision of law is going to only help out
you
a
need
small group of people.
You need schools.
You
need
anyway.
Good roads.
Yeah,
all that
them.
Is required.
Yeah.
It does not, you know, negate any of those things.
It doesn't negate the need for hospitals.
What's going to happen is, as an altruism for the family's well-being, financial well-being, the patient might feel pressured to come up with a document like that. So it may not be active coercion, it might be passive coercion.
Okay, you don't have
but
the mic,
sir. Only when I'm terminally ill,
person,
for God's sake, you know, only when I'm terminally ill in an irreversible
but
state.
But if I have an illness which is probably going to lead me to be terminally ill, I might be under psychological passive coercion by the family and expected to come up with a document
I
like that.
I don't think my family can ever say this to me.
Document that no,
actually,
I want
sir,
to
I come from Kerala.
The
we have the biggest
family.
Care of palliative, community-based palliative
best
care.
In India.
I
absolutely.
Think that's what we are. Doctor was talking about pitching on human considerations.
Yes.
I think the community-based palliative care
okay.
is the
so
best way to
question.
Care
is
for
this
people.
Not have we not made it easier for the government to abdicate its responsibility?
Yes.
We are saying that
yes,
people are
absolutely.
Are living longer, our lifespans have exceeded, but we don't have palliative care, we don't have psychiatrists who can even like
care
look into whether someone
for.
Is being forced, not being forced, whether they're depressed, whether they're not depressed, and the government has abdicated its role. And
yes.
they're saying, okay, now you
no,
can go in for withdrawal.
And my problem, like in a lot of cases, is not just the error of commission. My problem is the error of omission for the doctors to prematurely want to believe that
right.
perhaps nothing more can be done.
Okay, Vipul, closing
I think
argument.
We are confusing the issue
a
little
minute
bit.
And
no,
half left.
There is
totally.
No question. We need
totally
very good medical ethics in this country. There's no
yes.
doubt about
there
it.
There is another
we
point.
Do not want our doctors.
There are instances.
We do not want our doctors to be mercenary. Okay.
Yes,
care,
that's
all
fine.
We need a framework. All that is required. This is a very simple thing. This only says that when I'm in a state of unbearable suffering, or if I'm in a state where I'm being subjected to unnecessary medical intrusion.
That's all. Then when the question pertains to a person's life,
define unbearable pain and suffering. Out of
so, not
how
many people. Not many people in the beginning. But it,
but,
it
but
is
definitely
a
step has been taken into right direction.
What is the opinion of the medical board?
That this young lady was trying to bring up.
Clearly, this is an emotional issue for patients, for the families. It's a serious issue for society, and all viewpoints need to be considered before a law is put in place. And it's important so that we all speak up over the next few months or years. I don't know how long it'll take for that law to come into place. And but it's also important to listen to one another and listen to all points of view. And that's what we aim to do on We the People. Thank you for watching. Good night. Thank you.